Behind her towered the terrible Haken weapon of murder. Now she was to be in charge of it in order to do good. Beata felt a lump in her throat. For the first time in her life, she knew she was doing good. She was living her dream, and it was good. Chapter 44. The burly soldier gave her the side of his boot on her rump. She had tried to hurry out of his way as soon as he kicked, but she wasn't fast enough. She pressed her lips tight against the sting of it. If only the power of the gift worked, she would have done him a turn. She considered using her cane, but, keeping in mind her business, thought better of dispensing justice just then, no matter how sorely it was needed. Rattling her 3 copper coins in her tin cup, Annalena Alderin, former prelate of the Sisters of the Light, the most powerful women in the old world for over 3/4 of a millennium, moved on to beg from the soldiers gathered round the next fire. Like most soldiers, the next bunch she came upon as she moved through the camp showed interest when she first approached, thinking she might be a whore, but their ardor for female companionship quickly faded when she came into the ring of firelight and gave them a big, gap-toothed grin, or the illusion of one anyway, with the aid of some greasy soot on a few selected teeth. It was quite convincing, actually, along with the rags she had layered over her dress, the dung-soaked head wrap, lest anyone decide they could overlook the craggy smile, and the walking cane. The cane was the worst. Affecting a bad back was giving her one. 2 soldiers got it in their heads they could disregard her shortcomings in view of the scarcity of women. While they were handsome enough in that savage brute sort of way, she had to politely decline their offers. Rejecting such insistent invitations had been messy. Fortunately, what with all the commotion of camp life, no one noticed a man dying of a suddenly slit throat. Such a death among men like those of the Imperial Order would not even be questioned. Taking a life was something Anne did only with great reluctance. Given the mission of these soldiers and the use to which they would have put her before killing her, her reluctance was surmountable. Like the soldiers gathered around the next fire as they ate and told stories, none thought anything of her wandering among them. Most gave her a look-see, but quickly went back to their stew and coarse camp bread, washed down with ale and bawdy stories. A beggar elicited little more than a grunt intended to keep them moving along. With an army this size, there was an entire culture of camp followers. Tradesmen traveled with their own wagons, or shared one with others. They followed in the wake of the army, offering a wide variety of services not provided by the Imperial Order. Anne had even seen an artist busy at drawing portraits of proud officers on a historic campaign. Like any artist wishing to have steady employment and the use of all his fingers, he used his talent to the customer's best advantage, putting them in triumphant poses, showing them with knowing eyes and handsome smiles, or all-conquering glowers, depending on the man's preference. Peddlers sold everything from meats and vegetables to rare fruits from back home. Anne herself hungered for such succulent reminders of the old world. Business was brisk in amulets for good luck. If a soldier didn't like the food provided by the Imperial Order and he had money, there were people to make him nearly anything he desired. Like a cloud of gnats, gamblers, hucksters, harlots, and beggars buzzed around the huge army. In the guise of a beggar, Anne was easily able to negotiate the Order's camp, searching as she would. It cost her only an occasional boot to the behind. Searching an army the size of this one was quite an undertaking, though. She had been at it nearly a week. She was bone-weary and growing impatient. In that week, she could have managed to live reasonably well from what she gathered under her cover of begging, as long as she didn't mind eating maggot-infested rotting meat and moldering vegetables. She accepted such offerings graciously, and then discarded them when out of sight. It was a cruel joke by the soldiers, giving her the garbage they had intended to throw out. There were some among the beggars who would salt and pepper it through and then eat it. Each day, when it got too late to search, she returned to the camp followers and spent a little of her own money to buy humble but somewhat more wholesome food. Everyone thought she earned the meager amount begging. The truth be known, she was not very good at the business of begging, and a business it was. A few of the beggars, feeling sympathy when they saw her act, tried to help her improve her technique. Anne endured such distractions, lest it be discovered she was more than she presented herself to be. Some of the beggars made a good living at it, It was a mark of their talent that they could coax a coin from men such as these. She knew that by cruel fate, people were occasionally thrust against their wishes into helpless begging. She also knew from hundreds of years of experience, trying to give them help, that most beggars clung tenaciously to the life. Anne trusted no one in the camp, but of all the people there, she trusted beggars least. They were more dangerous than the soldiers. Soldiers were what they were and made no pretense. If they didn't want you around, they would order you away or give you the boot. Some would simply show her a blade in warning. If they intended you harm or murder, they made their intent clear. Beggars, on the other hand, lived lives of lies. They lied from the time they opened their eyes in the morning until they told the Creator a lie in their bedtime prayers. Of all the Creator's miserable creations, Anne most disliked liars, and those who repeatedly placed their trust and security in the hands of such liars. Liars were creation's jackals. Deception to a noble end, though regrettable, was sometimes necessary for a greater good. Lying for selfish reasons was the fertile dirt of immorality, from which sprouted the tendrils of evil. Trusting men who demonstrated a proclivity to lie proved you a fool, and such fools were nothing more to the liar than the dust beneath their boots, there to be trod upon. Anne knew liars were the Creator's children, the same as she, and that she was duty-bound to view them with patience and forgiveness. But she couldn't. She simply couldn't abide liars, and that was that. She was resigned to the fact that in the afterlife, she would have to take her lumps for it. Begging was proving to be time-consuming, so in order to cover as much ground as possible, Anne tried to do as little of it as possible. Every night, the camp was jumbled all over again, making it impossible to rely on the merit of previous searches, so she determined to make as much of each foray as possible. Fortunately, because the army was so vast, they did tend to stay in roughly the same order, much like a string of cargo wagons stopping along a road for the night. In the mornings, it was well over an hour after the leading edge started out, before the tail began to move. At night, the lead was cooking dinner long before the rear guard halted. They didn't cover a great deal of ground each day, but their progress was inexorable. Beyond their purpose, Anne was disturbed by their direction of travel. The order had been gathering for quite some time down around Graffin Harbor and the Old World. When they finally began to move, they had streamed up from those shores into the New World, but they turned with the coast, following it west, to where Anne had unexpectedly encountered them. Anne was no military tactician, but it struck her immediately as an odd thing for them to do. She had assumed they would attack north into the New World. That they were heading in such a seemingly fruitless direction told her there must be a good reason. Jagang did nothing without reason. While he was ruthless, confident, and bold, he was not rash. Jagang was skilled in the fine art of patience. The people of the Old World had always been anything but a homogeneous society. Anne had, after all, been observing them for over 9 centuries. She considered it charitable to merely say they were diverse, fractious, and intractable. There had been no 2 areas of the Old World that could agree on up from down. In the nearly 20 years she had been watching him, Jagang had methodically consolidated the seemingly ungovernable into a cohesive society. That it was brutal, corrupt, and inequitable was another matter. He had made them one, and in so doing forged a force of unprecedented might. What the parents might have been, independent and loyal only to their small place in the world, the children were not. A large percentage of the Imperial Order troops and command had been babes or young children when the Order seized power. They had grown up under the rule of Jagang, and, as children always did, believed as they were taught by those who led them, adopting the same values and morals. The Sisters of the Light, however, served a higher purpose than the affairs of governance. Anne had seen elected governments, kings, and other rulers come and go. The Palace of the Prophets and the Sisters, existing under the ancient spell that dramatically slowed their aging, always remained. While she and her sisters did work to help bring out mankind's better nature, their calling was in areas of the gift, not rule. But she did keep an eye to rulers, lest they interfere with the Creator's gift. Jagang, in recently committing himself to the elimination of magic, had overstepped matters of rule. His reign had become material to her. Now he was moving into the New World in his efforts to extinguish magic. Anne had observed over time that whenever Jigang swallowed a new land or kingdom, he would settle in as he began to infiltrate the next, and the next after that. He would find willing ears, and, with tempting promises of juicy slices of the graft to come, woo them into weakening their own defenses in the mask of virtue, peace. Some lands' discipline and defenses were so eviscerated from within that they threw out a welcoming carpet for Jigang rather than dare defy him. The foundations of some formerly strong lands became so riddled with the termites of diminished purpose, so decayed with the decadence of smug moderation, and so emaciated with the vacillating aims of appeasers, that even when they saw the enemy coming and did resist, they were easily toppled when the imperial order finally pushed. With the unexpected direction the order was taking to the west, Anne was beginning to worry that Jigang had been doing the unimaginable, sending envoys on covert missions, sailing around the Great Barrier, years before Richard destroyed the Towers of Perdition. Such missions would have been incredibly risky. Anne would know. She had done so herself. It was possible Jigang had books of prophecy or wizards with the talent who gave him reason to believe the barrier would come down. After all, Nathan had told Anne that very thing. If so, Jigang was not simply marching off for the purpose of exploration, exploitation, and conquest. From her experience watching him come to dominate the entirety of the old world, she knew Jigang rarely rolled down a road he hadn't first had widened and smoothed. Anne paused in the darkness between groups of men. She squinted off in several directions. Hard as it was for her to believe, she hadn't even seen Jigang's tents yet. She wanted to find them because she hoped they might give her a valuable clue in finding her sisters of the light. He likely would keep them near. She sighed in exasperation at not seeing anything but more fires and troops. In the darkness and confusion of the Order's camp, she knew she could be close and still not see Jigang's tents. The worst of it, though, was not having the gift to aid her. With the gift, she could easily have listened to distant conversations, cast small spells, and conjured discreet aid. Without the gift, she found the search a frustrating and fruitless experience. She could hardly believe she could be this close to the Sisters of the Light and not find them. With the gift, she would have been able to sense them were she close enough. Beyond the aid it would have provided, there was more to it. Being unable to use the gift was like being denied the Creator's love. Her lifetime of devotion to doing the Creator's work, coupled with the glory of touching her inner magic, her Han, the force of life, had always been supremely gratifying. Not that there hadn't been frustrations, fears, and failures, but there always was the opening of herself to her Han to make up for every trial. For over 9 centuries, her Han had been her constant companion through life. Her inability to touch her gift had on more than one occasion driven her to the verge of tears. She felt little different, for the most part, as long as she didn't think about it. But when her thoughts turned to touching that inner light, and she couldn't, it felt like a slow suffocation of the mind. As long as she didn't try to use her gift, it seemed it was still there, waiting, like a comforting friend seen out of the corner of her eye. But when she reached for it, put the weight of thought against it, it felt as if the ground opened and she plummeted into a terrifying black abyss. Without her gift and no longer living under the protection of the spell that had been around the Palace of the Prophets, Anne was no different than anyone else. She was, in reality, little more than a beggar. She was simply an old woman, aging like anyone else, with no more strength than any other old woman. The insights, knowledge, and, she hoped, wisdom of having lived as long as she had were her only advantages. Until Zed banished the chimes, she would be, for the most part, helpless. Until Zed banished the chimes, if Zed banished the chimes. Anne picked the wrong route, between wagons standing close together, and came to an impasse with someone going the other way. She excused herself and started to back up out of the way. Beggars were obeisant, even though it was insincere.
"Prelate?"
Anne froze.
"Prelate, is that you?"
Anne looked up into the startled face of Sister Georgia Safaro. They had known each other for more than 500 years. The woman's mouth was working as she tried to find words. Anne reached out and patted the hand holding a pail of steaming porridge. Sister Georgia flinched.
"Sister Georgia, thank the Creator, I found one of you at last."
Sister Georgia cautiously reached out and touched Anne's face, seemingly testing if it were real.
"You're dead," Sister Georgia said. I was at your funeral ceremony. I saw you and Nathan. Your bodies were sent into the light on the funeral pyre. I saw it. We prayed all night as we watched you and Nathan burn. Really? How sweet of you. You always were such a considerate person, Sister Georgia. That would be just like you, standing guard through the darkness, praying for me. I'm so appreciative. But it wasn't me.
Sister Georgia flinched again.
But, Verna was named prelate.
Yes, I know. I wrote the orders, remember?
The woman nodded. Anne went on.
I had a reason. Nonetheless, I'm quite alive, as you can well see.
At last, Sister Georgia set down the bucket and threw her arms around Anne.
Oh, prelate, oh, prelate.
That was all Sister Georgia could get out before she started bawling like a baby. Anne managed to get her calmed down in short order with some short words. They were in no place to risk being seen in such a way. Their lives were at stake, and Anne couldn't have them lost for no more reason than a woman weeping out of control.
Prelate, what's wrong with you? You smell like dung, and you look a mess.
Anne chuckled.
I didn't dare allow my beauty to be witnessed by all these men, or I would have more offers of marriage than I could turn down.
Sister Georgia laughed, but it dissolved into tears again.
They're beasts, all of them.
Anne comforted her.
I know, Sister Georgia, I know.
She lifted the woman's chin.
You are a sister of the light. Straighten yourself up now. What is done to this body is not what matters. Our eternal souls are what concerns us. Beasts in this life can do what they will to your body, but they cannot touch your pure soul. Now act what you are, a sister of the light.
Sister Georgia smiled through the tears.
Thank you, prelate. I needed to hear your scolding to remember my calling. Sometimes it's all too easy to forget.
Anne went to her purpose.
Where are the others?
Sister Georgia lifted a hand to point off to Anne's right and a little behind.
Over there. Are you all together?
No, prelate. Some of the sisters have sworn themselves to the Nameless One.
She bit her lower lip and wrung her hands.
There are sisters of the dark in our order.
Yes, I know.
You do?
Well, Jagang keeps them elsewhere. The sisters of the light are together, but I don't know where the sisters of the dark are, nor do I care to.
Praise the Creator, Anne said with a sigh. That was what I was hoping, that there wouldn't be any of them among you.
Sister Georgia glanced over her shoulder.
Prelate, you must get out of here, or you'll be killed or captured.
She started pushing Anne, trying to turn her around and get her to leave. Anne seized Sister Georgia's sleeve in an attempt to get the woman to listen.
I'm here to rescue the sisters. Something has happened to give us the rare opportunity to help you escape.
There is no way.
Silence,
Anne growled in a whisper.
Listen to me. The chimes are loose.
Sister Georgia gasped.
That's not possible.
Oh, really?
I'm telling you it is so. If you don't believe me, then why do you think your power is gone?
Sister Georgia stood mute as Anne listened to the raucous laughter of men gambling not far away. The sister's gaze kept searching the area beyond the wagons, fearing they would be caught.
Well, Anne asked,
what did you think was the reason for your power being gone?
Sister Georgia's tongue darted out to wet her lips.
We aren't allowed to open ourselves to our Han. Jagang only allows us to do so if he wants something. Otherwise, we mustn't.
He's in our minds. He's a dreamwalker, prelate. He can tell if we touch our Han without permission. It's something you don't dare try twice. He can control it. He can make you very sorry for anything you do which he doesn't like.
The woman was dissolving into tears again.
Oh, prelate.
Anne pulled the woman's head down to her shoulder.
There, there, hush now. It's all right, Georgia, hush now. I'm here to get you away from this madness.
Sister Georgia pulled back.
Away? You can't. The Dreamwalker is in our minds. He could be watching us right this very minute. He can do that, you know.
Anne shook her head.
No, he can't. The chimes, remember? Your magic has failed. His magic has failed. He is no longer in your head. You are free of him.
Sister Georgia began objecting. Anne gripped her arm and started her moving.
Take me to the other sisters. I'll have no argument, do you hear? We must get away while we have a chance. But, prelate, we can't.
Anne seized the ring through Sister George's lip.
Do you want to continue to be a slave of this beast? Do you want to continue to be used by him and his men?
She gave the ring a tug.
Do you?
Tears welled in the woman's eyes.
No, prelate. Then get me to the tent with the other sisters of the light. I intend on getting you all away from Jigang this very night. But, prelate, move, before we're caught here.
Sister Georgia snatched up the pail of porridge and scurried off. Anne followed on her heels, with Georgia glancing back over her shoulder every few paces. The woman hurried along at a good clip, skirting every campfire and group of men by as wide a margin as she could without getting closer to men on the other side. Even as she did, men still occasionally noticed her and reached out to snatch at her skirt. Most would laugh when she squeaked and scooted away. When another man caught the sister's wrist, Anne put herself between them. She smiled at the man. He was so surprised he let go of Sister Georgia. The two of them made a quick escape.
You are going to get us killed,
Sister Georgia whispered as she hustled between wagons.
Well, I didn't think you were in the mood for what the fellow had in mind. If the soldier insists, we have to. If we don't, Jigang teaches us lessons if we don't.
Anne shoved her onward.
I know. But I'm going to get you out of here. Hurry up. We must get the sisters and escape while we have the chance. By morning, we'll be long gone, and Jigang won't know where to look.
The woman opened her mouth to object, but Anne shoved her onward.
As the Creator is my witness, Sister Georgia, I've seen more shilly-shallying out of you in the last 10 minutes than your first 500 years in this world. Now get me to the other sisters, or I'll make you wish for Jigang's clutches instead of mine.
Chapter 45 Anne took a quick glance around as Sister Georgia lifted the tent flap. Satisfied that no one was paying any attention, Anne ducked inside. A crowd of women huddled inside the dimly lit tent, some lying down, some sitting on the ground hugging their knees, some with arms around one another like frightened children. Not many even bothered to look up. Anne couldn't recall seeing such a cowed-looking bunch. She reproved herself. These women had suffered unspeakable abuse.
Shoo,
Sister Rochelle, sitting near the tent opening, said, without meeting Anne's eyes.
Out with you, beggar.
Good for you, child, Anne said.
Good for you, Sister Rochelle, for keeping beggars from your humble home.
Half the women looked up at the sound of Anne's voice. Wide eyes stared in the dim candlelight. Some of the women pushed at others who weren't paying attention, or swatted an arm or pulled on a sleeve. Some were dressed in outfits Anne could scarcely believe. The clothes covered them from neck to ankle, but were so sheer as to leave the women, for all practical purposes, naked. Others had on their own dresses, but they were in a state of wretched disrepair. A few had on little more than rags. Anne smiled.
Fianola, you look well considering your ordeal. Sister Karenna, Sister Aubrey, Sister Cherna, you look to be getting some gray hair. It happens to us all, but you wear it well.
Women all round blinked with disbelieving eyes.
It's really her, Sister Georgia said. She's really alive. She didn't die like we thought. Prelate Annalena Alderin lives.
Well, Anne said, Verna is the prelate now, but...
Women were rushing to their feet. It rather reminded Anne of sheep watching a wolf coming down the hill. They all looked like they might bolt for the countryside. Sisters of the Light were women of strength, women of fortitude, women of decisive intelligence. Anne feared to consider what it would have taken to reduce all these women to such a sorry-looking state. She ran a gentle hand down a head beside her.
Sister Lucy, you are a sight for my tired eyes,
Anne smiled with genuine joy.
You all are.
She felt a tear roll down her own cheek.
My dear, dear sisters, you are all a blessed sight to my eyes. I thank the Creator he has led me to you.
And then they were all falling to knees to bow to her, to whisper their prayers to the Creator for her safety, to weep with disbelief.
There, there, none of that,
she said, wiping her fingers across the cheek of Sister Lucy, clearing away the tears.
None of that.
We have important business, and we've no time for a good cry. Not that I'm saying you aren't all entitled, but later would be an excellent time for it, while right now is not.
Sisters kissed the hem of her dress. More came forward on their knees to do the same. They were the lost, who were now found. It nearly broke Anne's heart. She smiled her best prelate smile and indulged them, touching each head, blessing each of them by name, and thanking the Creator aloud for sparing each life and guarding each soul. It was an informal, formal audience with the prelate of the Sisters of the Light. She didn't think it the proper time to insist on reminding them she was no longer the prelate, that she'd given the office to Verna for safekeeping. At that moment of joy, it just wasn't important. Anne allowed the reunion to go on for only a few minutes before forcing it to an end.
"Listen now, all of you. Hush. We will have more than enough time later to share our joy at being together. Now I must tell you why I have come. Something terrible has happened. But, as you know more than most, there must be balance in all things. The balance is that the terrible event will, in the Creator's balance, allow you to escape."
"The prelate says the chimes are loose," Sister Georgia put in.
Everyone gasped.
"She believes it."
Clear implication was that Sister Georgia didn't believe it, that it was impossible, and anyone would have to be a fool to think it was so.
"Now listen to me, all of you."
Anne let her brow draw down in a look every woman in the room knew well enough to bring sweat to their brows.
"You all remember Richard?"
There were nods all around.
"Well, it's a long story, but Jigang loosed a plague that killed thousands of people. It was a horrifying death for countless people. Untold numbers of children perished. Untold numbers of children were left orphans. Sister Amelia, she sworn to the Keeper,"
several sisters in the back gasped aloud.
"I know," Anne said. "She is the one who went to the underworld. She brought back the plague for Jigang. She murdered so many innocent people. Richard was able to use his power to stop the plague."
There were astonished looks all around, accompanied by whispering. Anne imagined she was probably telling them too much all at once, but she had to explain enough so they would understand what was at stake.
"Richard contracted the plague, and in order to save his life, the Mother Confessor used magic."
Anne held up a finger to silence them.
"Nathan escaped."
Again, gasps filled the tent. Anne hushed them lest they fall to wailing.
"Nathan told the Mother Confessor the names of the chimes in order to save Richard's life. It was a terrible choice to make, but I believe he only did it to save Richard. The Mother Confessor spoke the names of those three chimes aloud to complete the spell to save Richard. The chimes are here. She called them into this world. I have a personal knowledge of this. I have seen them, and I have seen them kill."
This time there were no protests. Even Sister Georgia seemed convinced. Anne felt vindicated in her decision to tell them this much of it.
"As you all know, the chimes being loose has the potential to bring about an unprecedented cataclysm. It has begun. Magic is failing. All our magic is diminished to the point where it is useless. However, in the meantime, Jigang's magic is useless too. While this is so, we can get you all out of here."
"But what difference do the chimes make?"
someone asked. Anne drew a patient breath.
"With the chimes here, magic is failing. That means Jigang's magic as a dreamwalker has failed, just as our gift has failed. Your minds are all free of the dreamwalker."
Sister Georgia stared in disbelief for a moment.
"But what if the chimes go back to the underworld? That could happen unexpectedly at any time. Jigang would be back in our heads."
"You can't tell he's there, prelate. You can't tell. The chimes could already have fled back to the world of the dead. They may not have succeeded in gaining a soul. They may have fled to the protection of the Nameless One. The Dreamwalker could be back in my head watching me as we speak."
Anne grasped the woman's arms.
"No, he's not. Now listen to me. My magic has failed. Yours is gone too. All of us are without the gift. I will be able to tell when it returns. Any of us can. For now it's gone, and so is the Dreamwalker."
"We aren't allowed to use our gift without permission,"
a sister to the right said.
"We couldn't tell when our power returned to know the chimes had fled this world."
"I will know immediately," Anne said.
"Jigang doesn't prevent me from touching my Han if I can."
Sister Corinna stepped forward.
"But if the chimes do go back, then His Excellency will return to..."
"No, listen.
There is a way to prevent the dreamwalker from ever again entering your mind.
That's not possible. Sister Cherna's eyes darted about, as if Jigang might be hiding in the shadows watching them.
Prelate, you must get out of here.
You're going to be caught. Someone might have seen you.
They could be telling Jigang as we speak.
Please, get away, Sister Fianola said. We are lost. Forget about us and get away. It can come to no good end, you being here.
Anne growled again.
Listen to me. It is possible to be safe from the dreamwalker entering your mind. We can all get away from his evil grip.
Sister Georgia was back to disbelieving.
But I don't see how.
How do you think he doesn't enter my mind? Don't you think he would want me, the prelate herself? Wouldn't he get me if he could?
They were all silent as they considered.
Well, I guess he would.
Sister Aubrey's brow drew down.
How is it he isn't able to take you, too?
I'm protected. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Richard is a war wizard. You all know what that means. He has both sides of the gift.
The sisters blinked in astonishment, and then they all fell to whispering to one another.
Furthermore, Anne went on, bringing the cramped tent full of women to silence, he is a Rawl.
What difference does that make?
Sister Fianola asked.
The Dreamwalkers are from the time of the Great War. A wizard of that time, a war wizard named Rawl, an ancestor of Richard's, conjured a bond to protect his people from them. Gifted descendants of the House of Rawl are born with this bond with his people that protects them from Dreamwalkers. The people of Richard's land are all bonded to him as their Lord Rawl. Because of that, and because of the magic of it passed down to him, they are all protected from the Dreamwalker. That keeps Jigang from their minds. A Dreamwalker can't enter the mind of anyone bonded to the Lord Rawl.
But we are not his people,
women all around were saying. Anne held up a hand.
It doesn't matter. You only have to swear your loyalty to Richard. Swear it meaningfully in your heart, and you are safe from the Dreamwalker.
She passed a finger before their eyes.
I have long been sworn to Richard. He leads us in our fight against this monster, Jigang, who would end magic in this world. My faith in Richard, my bond to him, my being sworn to him in my heart, protects me from Jigang entering my mind.
But what you say about the chimes being here in this world is true,
a sister in the back said in a whine.
Then the magic of the bond will fail too, so we would have no protection.
Anne sighed and tried to remain patient with these frightened and intimidated women. She reminded herself to keep in mind these women had been in the savage hands of the enemy for a long time.
But the two cancel each other, don't you see?
Anne turned up her palms like scales, moving them up and down in opposition.
As long as the chimes are here, Jigang's magic doesn't work, and he can't enter your minds.
She moved her hands in the opposite direction.
When the chimes are banished, and if you are sworn to Richard, then his bond keeps Jigang from your mind.
Either one or the other protects you. Do you all see?
You must only swear to Richard, who leads the fight against Jigang, fights for our cause, the cause of the light, and you never again need fear the Dreamwalker being able to reach you. Sisters, we can get away. Tonight, right now. Do you at last see? You can be free.
They all stared dumbly. Finally, Sister Rochelle spoke up.
But we aren't all here.
Anne looked around.
Where are the rest? We will collect them and leave. Where are they?
Again, the women retreated into frightened silence. Anne snapped her fingers at Sister Rochelle for her to answer. Finally, the woman spoke again.
The tents.
Every woman in the room cast her eyes down. The gold rings through their lower lips shone in the candlelight.
What do you mean, the tents?
Sister Rochelle cleared her throat, trying to keep the tears struggling to break through from doing so.
Jigang, when one of us displeases him, or he is angry with us, or he wants to punish us or teach us a lesson, or simply wishes to be cruel, sends us to the tents. The soldiers use us. They pass us around.
Sister Cherna fell to the ground, weeping.
We must be whores for his men.
Anne gathered her resolve.
Listen to me, all of you. That ends right now.
Right now, you are free. You are again sisters of the light. Do you hear me? You are no longer his slaves.
But what about the others? Sister Rochelle asked.
Can you get them?
Sister Georgia drew up tall and stiff.
You wait here, prelate. Sister Rochelle, Aubrey, and Corinna will go with me to see what we can do.
She gave the three a severe look.
Won't we? We know what we must do.
The three nodded. Sister Corinna put a hand under Anne's arm.
You wait here, will you? Wait here until we return.
Yes, all right, Anne said.
But you must hurry. We need to get out of here before it gets too late in the night, or we will raise suspicions, traipsing through the camp when everyone else is sleeping. We can't wait for...
Just wait, Sister Rochelle said in a calm voice. We will see to it. Everything will be all right.
Sister Georgia turned to the tent full of sisters.
See to it she waits, will you? She must wait here.
The sisters nodded. Anne put her fists on her hips.
If you take too long, we will have to leave without you. Do you understand? We can't...
Sister Rochelle put a hand against Anne's shoulder.
We will be back in plenty of time. Wait.
Anne sighed.
The Creator be with you.
Anne sat among sisters who seemed to recede back into the prison of their private thoughts. Their joy, so evident when they had first seen her, had faded. They were once again distant and unresponsive. They stared off without listening as Anne tried telling them some of the lighter stories of her adventures. She chuckled as she recounted incommodious moments, hoping someone would become interested and perhaps smile at least. No one did. None of them asked anything or even seemed to be listening. They would no longer even meet her gaze. Like trapped animals, they wanted only to escape the terror. Anne was growing more uncomfortable by the moment. By the moment, sitting among these women she knew so well, her hackles were beginning to rise at the thought that maybe she didn't know them as well as she had believed. Sometimes, trapped animals didn't know enough to run for an open gate. When the tent flap opened, they scooted away from her. Anne rose. Four huge men, layered in leather plates, belts, straps, hides over their shoulders, and weapons jangling from their belts, ducked into the tent, followed by sisters Georgia, Rochelle, Aubrey, and Corinna. The men's stringy, greasy hair whipped from side to side as they checked to each side. By the way they carried themselves, they looked to Anne to be men of more authority than mere soldiers. Sister Rochelle pointed.
That's her, the prelate of the Sisters of the Light.
Rochelle,
Anne growled.
What's this about? What do you think?
The man, seeming to be in charge, seized her jaw, turning her head left, then right as he appraised her.
You sure?
His dark glower moved to Sister Rochelle.
She looks like the rest of the beggars to me.
Sister Georgia pointed at Anne.
I'm telling you, that's her.
The man's eyes turned to Sister Georgia as she went on.
She's just fixed herself up like that to get in here.
The man gestured the other soldiers forward. They brought manacles and chains. Anne tried to fight them off to twist away, but the soldier who seized her, unconcerned, gripped her fists and pulled them out for another man to clamp on the manacles. Two of them forced her to the ground as another man set down an anvil. They held the manacles' ears on the anvil as they hammered pins through the holes, and then mushroomed the heads of the pins, locking the manacles on permanently. They made them too tight, so they dug into her flesh. But the men were indifferent to her unintended cry of pain. Anne knew better than to struggle when it could do no good, so she made herself become still. Without her Han, she was as helpless as a child against these big men. The sisters mostly cowered as far away as they could get. None watched. The men hammered closed the open links at the end of the chains. Anne let out a grunt as she was slammed face down in the dirt. More manacles were affixed to her ankles. More chains were attached. Big hands lifted her. A chain around her waist webbed all the rest together. Anne was not even going to be able to feed herself. One of the men scratched his thick beard.
And she has no one with her.
Sisters Georgia and Rochelle shook their heads. He chuckled.
How'd she get to be the prelate if she's that dumb?
Sister Georgia curtsied without meeting his eyes.
We don't know, sir, but she is.
He shrugged and started to leave, but then halted and cast his gaze over the shivering women on the floor. He pointed a thick finger at a sister in one of the absurd, transparent outfits. You! Sister Theola flinched. She closed her eyes.
Anne could see her lips moving in a futile prayer to the Creator.
Come along, the man commanded. Trembling, Sister Theola stood. The other three men grinned their approval of their leader's choice as they shoved her out ahead of them.
You said you wouldn't,
Sister Georgia spoke up, if meekly.
Did I?
The man asked. He showed her a wicked grin.
Changed my mind.
Let me go in her place,
Sister Georgia called out as the man turned to leave. He turned back.
Well, aren't you the noble one?
He seized Sister Georgia's wrist and pulled her after as he went out through the flap.
Since you're so eager, you can come along with her.
After the men left with the two women, the tent fell to terrible silence. None of the sisters would look at Anne as she sat hobbled in the chains.
Why?
Anne had spoken the words softly, but it rang through the tent like the huge bell atop the palace of the prophets. Several sisters quailed at the single word. Others wept.
We know better than to try to escape, Sister Rochelle said at last. We all tried it first. We truly did, prelate. Some of us died trying. It was prolonged and horrible. His Excellency taught us the futility of trying to escape. Aiding anyone in an attempt to escape is a grave offense. None of us wishes that lesson visited upon us again.
But you could have been free.
We know better, Sister Rochelle said. We can't be free. We belong to His Excellency.
As victims at first, Anne said. But now, by choice. I willingly risked my life that you might be free. You were given the option, and you chose to remain slaves rather than reach for freedom. Worse, though, you all lied to me. You lied in the cause of evil.
The women hid their faces as Anne delivered a withering glare.
And each of you knows what I think of liars, what the Creator thinks of those who lie in the cause of opposing His work.
But, prelate, Sister Cherna whined.
Silence! I have no use for your words. You no longer have any right to have me hear them. If I ever get out of these chains, it will be by the aid of those who sincerely serve the light. You are no better than the Sisters of the Dark. At least, they have the honesty to admit their vile master.
Anne fell silent when a man stepped through the opening into the tent. He was average in height and powerfully built, with massive arms and chest. His fur vest was open, revealing dozens of jewel-studded gold chains hanging from his bull neck. Each thick finger held a ring worthy of a king. His smooth, shaved head reflected points of light from the candles. A fine gold chain ran from a gold ring in his left nostril to another in his left ear. The long braided ends of his mustache hung past his jaw, matching the braid in the center under his lower lip. His eyes, though, marked the nightmare of the dreamwalker. They had no whites to them at all. The murky orbs were clouded over with sullen, dusky shapes, shifting in a field of inky obscurity. Yet Anne had no doubt whatsoever that he was looking right at her. She couldn't imagine the gaze of the Keeper himself being any worse.
A visitor, I see.
His voice matched his muscle.
The pig can speak, Anne said. How fascinating.
Degang laughed. It was not an agreeable sound.
Oh, darling, but aren't you the brash sort? Georgia tells me you'd be the prelate herself. That true, darling?
She noticed out of the corner of her eye that every woman in the tent was on her knees with her face to the dirt in a deep bow. Anne couldn't say she didn't understand their not wanting to meet the man's disturbing gaze. She gave him a pleasant smile.
Annalena Aldrin, former prelate of the Sisters of the Light, at your service.
The cleft between his prodigious chest muscles deepened as he pressed his hands together in the pose of prayer and bowed toward her with mock respect of her rank.
Emperor Jagang, at yours.
Anne sighed irritably.
Well, what's it to be, Jagang? Torture? Rape? Hanging? Beheading? Burning?
The grisly grin visited him again.
My, darling, but don't you know how to tempt a man?
He grabbed a fistful of hair and lifted Sister Cherna.
See, the thing is, I got plenty of these regular sisters, and I got plenty of the other kind, too, the ones sworn to the Keeper. I confess to liking them better.
He arched an eyebrow over a forbidding eye.
They can still use some of their magic.
Sister Cherna's eyes watered in pain as he gripped her throat.
But I've only got one prelate.
Sister Cherna's feet were clear of the ground by several inches. She couldn't breathe, but made no effort to fight. His terrible, massive muscles rippled and glistened in the candlelight. The cords in his arms strained. Cherna's eyes widened as his grip tightened. Her mouth gaped in silent fright.
So,
Jigang said to the others,
she confirmed everything about the chimes, told you everything about them.
Yes, several offered at once, clearly hoping he would release Sister Cherna. Not everything, Anne thought. If Zed was ever going to succeed at anything, she hoped the chimes would be it.
Good.
Jigang dropped the woman. Sister Cherna crumpled in a heap, her hands tearing at her throat as she struggled to get air. She couldn't get her breath. Jigang had crushed her windpipe. Her fingers clawed at the air. As she lay at his feet, she began turning blue. With desperate effort, she struggled her way into Anne's lap. Anne stroked the poor, ruined woman's head with an outpouring of helpless compassion.